321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today we're talking about Street Root correspondent Anna Wilcox's recent article, Young Activists Reimagine Care for Children of Incarcerated Parents. They fought through the system when they were young, and now they're calling on lawmakers to pay attention. I have here with me Jessica Katz, the Executive Director of Family Preservation Project, and Street Roots correspondent Anna Wilcox. We were also joined by Family Preservation Project's Reentry Doula Coordinator, Vanessa Sherrod, as well as Vanessa's daughter, one of the founding members of the Youth Advisory Council, Sophia Frias. So if y'all want to first talk about, Anna, how you got involved with this program and how you know these folks, that would be great.
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Anna, and I first got involved with FPP kind of on accident. They host a Day of Empathy event every year, and one year, the day before the event, apparently their camera operator was MIA, and so I just happened to meet someone. They asked if at a different event, happened to meet someone at a different event, and they asked if I was available the next day, and I just said sure. And then I went and filmed the event, and then I've been just kind of coming back whenever there's something going on. It's been a really enjoyable process. I enjoy working with all of the women and families in FPP, and it's incredibly inspiring, and I just couldn't have met like a nicer group of people in like doing all of this work, and filming. So I'm just really happy to be able to report on the story, and also happy to really turn it over to the lovely women and families of FPP.
Amazing. Thank you, Anna. So Jessica, as the executive director, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about what the Family Preservation Project does.
Sure. And also, Anna, I believe there are no real accidents. So, you know, you came into our life for a reason, and I'm so grateful. I didn't even know that story, actually. So that's great. The Family Preservation Project is a program that operates both at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility and in the community in a variety of ways, with the overarching recognition that mass incarceration has real consequences to young children and older children and families and communities. And so our hope is to both attend to what's happening in real time for families through a variety of programming, and then also to look to see if there aren't like broader systemic fixes where we will be able to have a greater impact and decrease the amount of pain and suffering that happens to families when, particularly in our case, their mother becomes incarcerated.
Thank you, Jessica. And Vanessa, would you mind telling me about your involvement with the Family Preservation Project and how it's impacted your life?
My name is Vanessa. I work for the Family Preservation Project as the Reentry Doula Coordinator, where I get to work with women and moms who have participated in the program and providing them much needed assistance and support back to their community, back to their kids. I am also an alumni of the Family Preservation Project, where 4 years out of the sentence I served, three of it, I was involved with the program for me and my children, where I firsthand got to experience the value of the program and what it meant to be a part of such amazing opportunity to be able to connect with my kids on a way deeper level, to begin healing within inside the prison walls, and to have like a true setup of when I came home, what that, I had support around that, and I think that played a huge role in transitioning back home and returning to parents. So the reason why I have the opportunity, to be able to do the work is like I believe lived experience, I think is like firsthand and foremost the most important work that we can do, is showing up for one another when you've walked through something and being able to walk alongside another person as they go through that same transition you once did. I think it makes a huge difference in not having to be alone, not having to, to deal with emotions and barriers and everything that we face once we release prison alone. And so I have the honor of being able to do that. I work with the women doing a needs assessment prior to the release and kind of individually find out what they're facing when they come home, whether it be like family dynamics, what the, returning to parent situation looks like, and just wrapping them around love with love and support, however they say they need. And so, with that, that's why I get to do the work is that I get to, it's like a living amends. It's a true honor just to be a part of this program and this alumni and to continue to watch the family grow and watch these kids grow and watch my kids and other kids be a part of the advocacy as well and advocating for other kids who were impacted just as they were. And I get to do the work as a mom who was impacted and giving back in the same way.
Sophia, would you mind introducing yourself and your relationship to this program?
Hello, my name is Sophia Frias. I am 16 years old, and I am a founding member of the Family Preservation Project's Youth Advisory Council. I was 7 years old when I first got involved with the Family Preservation Project. What I remember being most important about the time in FPP was being around other kids who understood what I was going through. It helped me feel less alone, and it gave me a safe space where I could just be a kid without worrying so much, building relationships, and just having friends around me. Even still being friends with them till this day is just, it was really important to me. And yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So there's a couple other things that I'd love to talk about. So this Day of Empathy event day just happened, and it happens once a year. Is that right?
Yes. This was our fifth annual. No. Oh, fifth or sixth? My daughter's correcting me.
Yep. Number six.
Number six. Okay, the years
I'm
are
knowing.
you're knowing. Yes, you are. Yeah, sixth annual year. It's been an amazing platform to use to be able to like, knowledge is power. And I feel like, the kids get to educate. This year they were able to educate folks on children's rights of incarcerated parents, which was an amazing opportunity. And they did such a beautiful, beautiful job. Yeah.
Amazing, thank you. So, could you or Jessica, either one of you, talk a little bit about some of the different things that happened during this Day of Empathy? And Jessica, you're talking about a documentary that was a part of this whole Day of Empathy.
Yes, we are so fortunate to have been in community with Brian Lindstrom, who is a talented filmmaker, documentary filmmaker in Portland, and a lovely human who's been documenting the voyage of FBP for the last decade. And one of the films that he made was called Like a Shield. And Like a Shield came about after 17 hours of interviews with moms and kids who had been participants in FPP to just reflect back on what it was like to not be recognized, excuse me, as you are like going through the traumatic event of your parent becoming incarcerated. We made the film in the hopes that it would help bring people into this issue as we worked to introduce legislation that would create a Bill of Rights and statute in Oregon. And it was, I think, very instrumental in bringing people into an issue that if you don't have to experience it, you don't experience it. And so for the Day of Empathy, the hope was that young people who have been impacted by their parents' incarceration could sort of roll back some of the scenarios that were not great and reauthor them in a way that centered the well-being of children. And so for the event, we ran the whole film, and then the Family Preservation Project's Youth Advisory Council, we sort of went through the film together and picked out a couple of illustrative vignettes from the film. And we ran those back, and then the young people had been working on reauthoring those stories. So they were able to record their rewrites and then come onto the stage and sort of be seen as authors of new stories as we hear them, the audio of them rewriting the stories. And I thought it was incredibly powerful because I think our hope always with a Day of Empathy and anything FPP is that we're not necessarily inundating people with terrible, horrible, traumatic stories. We're kind of saying that those happen, moving through them, and then working towards how can we do this in a different way that is perpetuates less harm and centers care and love and healing. And so I thought the young people did just a beautiful job making that offering. And a lot of people I talked to after the event said they left feeling really full of hope at a time that they needed to feel hope. So I thought that was beautifully done.
During the Day of Empathy, like how this sort of reauthoring was structured, was that like the film Like a Shield, which includes those like all of the interviews with children and mothers who are impacted by incarceration. Throughout the film like the Bill of Rights of children with incarcerated parents like flickers through the entire film. So like there will be something pop up on the screen and it's the first Bill of Right is listed in text. And then what follows are stories that pertain to that Bill of Right. So the whole entire film, Like a Shield, is really about the Bill of Rights of children with incarcerated parents. So during this like reauthoring, what happened is like for certain segments of that film, the stories of mothers and mostly of children were replayed over the theater screen. And then after those stories were replayed, then we re-recorded these stories. But the stories that were reread really had, they were really kind of focused on specific legal actions. So, like, for example, having an advocate waiting for you, a trained advocate waiting for you in the car, if children are present, so that during the arrest, you have a person that can come and talk with the kids. So, in the article, I kind of talk about those as like these are kind of amendments. These are things that you change in policy and you change about how like these arrests happen and about how people and how children are supported during the arrest and during incarceration. So there's a little bit of like in this interview we're using a lot of the language of reauthoring. And in my article I think I use more language that's about like kind of rewriting.
Can I clarify? I want to clarify one thing because it's important to me. But so the young people in the Youth Advisory Council were not reauthoring their own stories or reliving their own stories. They were reauthoring stories that we hear in the film that were experiences that other young people have had. So I just wanted to clarify that point that they weren't being asked to relive their own traumatic event. They were taking these collective of stories and giving people a path forward for a way that it could look and feel different.
Thank you for that clarification, Jessica. Yeah, that is Vanessa, I wonder if you would share how this event and this like reauthoring impacted you.
Being a part of this, I mean, every year has been impactful in my life, in my children's life. I think it's been, I mean, to hear me personally, to be able to see my kids up there on the stage and revisioning, you know, creating a different vision of what, you know, what policy changes should look like in regards to how they're impacted during a parent's arrest or a parent being incarcerated is very emotional, very empowering. It's to see that they have the solutions, and we know this. We just want everyone else to know this, that they have the solutions, which if you ask me, most people who have been impacted by harm usually do have the solutions for change. And it's a time for community. It's such like it seems like every year it gets bigger. Every year we see more and more moms, more and more kids engaged, wanting to make change in the world, which is a beautiful thing. It's an amazing opportunity to be a part of.
Thanks, Vanessa. I'm curious how this day of empathy impacted you, Sophia.
I would say it impacted me a lot in a really good way. Even I can say like it's very healing. Like just being there with my sister, with everybody else, a part of the Youth Advisory Council. I mean, it's a really beautiful like feeling because I get to sit in front of a bunch of people and share my experience and share my thoughts. And it's really like, because I think about those thoughts by myself, and I'm like, I want more people to know how I feel, and I want to help other kids. So just being there and just knowing that we're getting steps closer to, and like anything possible that we can do to get closer to just like spreading the program and being heard. It's a really good feeling to be heard and like someone who's experienced it and just gets to, I get to share that experience. And people in the crowd, like just, I don't know, just seeing them, like they look like they really care.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense.
I also just wanted to add briefly that I think part of our journey is to actively work on reducing the shame and stigma around this particular topic, because I think because of the shame and stigma, we don't have a way to talk about it that's supportive. We don't have a vocabulary for it, like we have a vocabulary for death or divorce or other, traumatic events that impact children. So I think reducing the amount of stigma and shame that we all have around this topic is articulated in one of the rights in the Bill of Rights, and just really important, I think, to us in this community as well.
I'd love to just talk about the nine basic rights that are in this Bill of Rights and kind of where that started.
I really don't know the totality of the origin story. Other than that, California was a real leader in bringing in, I think, authoring and bringing the Bill of Rights forward. Oregon was the first state to create the Bill of Rights for children of incarcerated parents in statute, but we certainly stood on the shoulders of people who had been at this work for quite some time in California. And I think in 2015, we sort of brought the idea, the concept forward of trying to create the Bill of Rights in statute in Oregon. And in 2017, it passed and became law. And I think what we learned and have carried forward in future legislative work is that passing a bill is the beginning of conversation, and where the rubber hits the road is implementation. And there were fits and starts. There was a body that was sort of tasked with implementation. That body dissolved during COVID and just didn't come back online. I think what we were very committed to during the first iteration of the work group was that there needed to be far better representation from people who were directly impacted, and most especially young people. So we sort of took the years, the last 5 years, to work on building a youth advisory council so that when something comes back online, which we hope we will help to create, young people will be ready to lead those conversations and processes. And I am full of admiration for the young people that I have the opportunity to work alongside, for putting in the work over the last 5 years to be in a place where I think they are definitely ready to lead some of the conversations and the what happens next around implementation.
Amazing.
I would like to add what I think is pretty cool from my point of view. So I was locked up. I was in prison when I heard about the Bill of Rights and knew that there was like FPP alumni moms and kids out there advocating to pass this bill. And I remember hearing about that this was happening, that there was moms and kids advocating for this and these rights. And I remember like applying them to like thinking like how things could have been different for me and my kids in so many ways if those rights would have been enacted in policy through my justice involvement. And I just remember getting really excited and being like, oh my gosh, this is a thing. Like I want to be involved with this. Like, how can I be a part of the solution, And I mean, I think majority of my time spent in there was as an advocate in any way possible and like wanting to make change inside the prison, outside the walls. What, there was a lot of things that I wanted to change through my experience because I knew there was a better way. And I just remember that was the first time I heard about a bill that, had passed and that, and it just felt like, gosh, there's like real bills that actually care and like we can make real change and I want to be a part of this change. And obviously, it was years, after getting out and seeing my kids start to participate in the youth advisory and advocate themselves. Like, it's like been such a real movement in our life, and I've seen it like affect everything in our lives in a positive way. Like the way my kids advocate for themselves, whether it's like in the education system or medical, system or employment, whatever, or in their daily lives. Like it's like a fire that's been lit in my little family unit. And so it's just, I don't know, I can literally remember the day that I got told about that, and I just think that's pretty unique that I got to be a part of something even while I was inside prison and hear that there's other moms and kids advocating for us, and then now me and my kids are advocating for other moms and kids, after us. So,
Yeah, that's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And you got to sort of re-author story. Will you share that story with us?
yes, of course. So the film that played was it was a mom who got arrested, very traumatic arrest. She got pushed down on the couch with her child in her hand. So me and Sophia, my colleague, my partner, we rewrited it, and what we said was, law enforcement calmly knocks on the door. When opened, law enforcement questions if any kids are present in the home. If yes, then law enforcement proceeds to get the kids and direct them to a trained mentor that can sit the kids down in a separate area and explain to them age appropriately what is happening. The mother is not cuffed until the child is taken care of and removed from the arrest. Mother is then allowed to make calls and safe plans for their child.
How do you hope people are impacted by this story and like the juxtaposition of the reality of what's going on versus the rewriting of what you would like this to be. How should people feel about the difference in those stories?
They should see that it's the way it should be, and it brings better outcomes. It reduces child trauma, and yeah.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. So this, the basic rights sort of outlined here, there's 9 of them. Is that right?
Yes.
Would you be able to tell me what they are?
I know a few of them by heart, but not all of them.
Well, honestly, maybe those ones are the ones that are most important to you. So I'd love to hear those.
Okay. I have the right to touch, see, and speak to my parent.
I have the right to be heard when decisions are made about me.
I have the right to be informed at an age-appropriate manner as well. I think that's part of that one, too.
Yeah, I have the right to be considered when decisions are made about my parent. I have the right to a lifelong relationship with my parent. There is a right that has to do with the right not to have experienced shame and stigma. And the right to be well cared for in my parents' absence.
Yeah, those all seem so essential.
Essential? I was just going to say essential, and also like makes the most sense, right? Like, whenever do we ever ask our kids, you know, what, nobody ever really thinks about kids in these situations. They just want to arrest the criminal and lock them up and, you know, do away with them and call it justice. But like, you know, that's what I think. I hope, like, through all this work, what we're doing is like changing the narrative of who all gets impacted. You know, it's a true statement when they say your family does time with you, and especially your kids. And so to know they have rights, I think it's very important. And I would love to see so many agencies take this law and enact it into policies where they reduce this trauma and create real opportunity for healing and growth, instead of furthering trauma.
And Anna, I wonder if you could just close us out with how can people get this article?
Yeah, so this article will be available in the Street Roots newspaper that is sold by vendors all over the city of Portland. And then you can also read it online at streetroots.org. And I think you can see a little 60-second summary clip of the Day of Empathy, which is a very short summary. You could see a little clip about it on Street Roots social media. So it'll be out and around and available. And I hope you read it. But more than anything, I hope that everybody listens to these wonderful ladies and just supports them in every facet that they need.
You've been listening to an episode of Street Roots Radio with correspondent Anna Wilcox, as well as Family Preservation Project Executive Director Jessica Katz, Family Preservation Project's Reentry Doula Coordinator Vanessa Sherrod, as well as Vanessa's daughter and one of the founding members of the Youth Advisory Council, Sophia Frias. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Frias.
KBOO.
Bird Note.
Male birds are often the larger, flashier sex that courts choosy females, which in turn raise their chicks. The male's attention-getting tactics include the virtuoso songs of lyrebirds, the booming built-in bagpipes of a male sage grouse, and individual drumming rhythms of palm cockatoos. However, in other species, females compete for males, and the males then tend the nest and raise the chicks. With jacanas, also known as lily trotters for their fabulous long toes that allow them to walk on lily pads, females challenge each other over territories in which to house a cluster of males half their size, and the males perform all the childcare. The females of three species of phalaropes, Wilson's, red-necked, and red, also rule the roost. They fight over males, sometimes mating with many. The female chooses the nest site, but then leaves the male with incubation and raising the young. Other stay-at-home dads include most of the ratites, such as ostriches, emus, and kiwis, which branched off early in bird evolution, suggesting that this childcare arrangement may have very old origins. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.